Welcome back, friends. You're on the Magnified Beacon here on AM 1400 WJET. I'm Monsignor Tom Snyderwine, the pastor of St. Luke's and your host. We have just prayed the liturgy for today, that of Pentecost Sunday. And now we come to the part of our program we call our focus theme, a topic from the Christian perspective. And tonight's topic, friends, well, just off of our own primary election day, I thought maybe it would be interesting to pursue where we're going here in America. And I'm so pleased to welcome to the Magnify Beacon microphone tonight author Tom Pockin. He is chairman of the Texas Workforce Commission and the former head of the Republican Party of Texas. He's a lawyer and a Vietnam veteran, and he has served in the Nixon and Reagan administrations. He's the author of a new book called Bringing America Home, and he gives us some vision and some direction whereby this can happen and where we have drifted as well. So I'm hoping that, once again, just off of our primary elections, that this will be a little balancing perspective for us all. With that, a very warm welcome to you, Tom Pockin. Happy to have you with us, Tom.
Good to be with you, Monsignor Tom. Two Toms today.
There we go. You got it. Okay, well, let's just think in terms of maybe what is a general comment in terms of what may be happening across the country. Ever since the health care passage was dragged through the American culture, so to speak, there has been some significant sediment of perhaps incumbent resistance. In other words, just for the fact that whoever's in office, maybe we ought to clean house. And we're beginning to see some of that evidenced in some of the primary elections around the country where sitting legislators for a long period of time are suddenly out of office. Do you think there's some trend in that direction?
Absolutely. I think that we saw evidence of it in Pennsylvania and in Kentucky. Arlen Specter, who was a very liberal pro-abortion Republican who decided to switch and become a Democrat in order to stay elected, got defeated in a Democratic primary. Down in Kentucky, Dr. Rand Paul, who really rose to influence, if you will, because of his involvement in the Tea Party movement, won the Republican nomination by a wide margin over a so-called Republican establishment candidate. I think there's a real tendency on the part of the people out there to be more worried about this country than at any time in their lifetimes, or our lifetimes, I should say, and trying to figure out what went wrong and how do we fix it before it's too late.
Tom, in your book, you refer to a group called the Neoconservatives.
Right.
And I would like, in fact, you have a chapter titled The Neoconservative Conquest of American Foreign Policy, but just to stay with this group called Neoconservatives, because I'd like, if you would, to define that. Next week, as a matter of fact, I'm going to have a representative from that group on my program, and maybe our listeners would be able to understand that perspective a little bit better. So what and who is a neoconservative?
Well, neoconservatives are people who describe themselves in that using that term, but they primarily started on the liberal wing of the Democratic Party. Some were socialists, some actually go back to originating as Trotskyites or social democrats. When I worked with them in the 1960s before on the Vietnam issue, after they had broken with the hard left of the Democratic Party, they tended to call themselves either socialist or social democrats. Later they became known as Hubert Humphrey, Scoop Jackson Democrats, kind of on the left of center, very much in favor of big government, LBJ programs, and at the same time, they were anti-communist. And so in the Reagan administration, there were allies with many of us who were traditional conservatives in the president's effort to win the Cold War and defeat the Soviet Empire. But after the Cold War ended, the neoconservatives really focused on the idea that we needed to impose, if you will, democracy on the Middle East through the use of military force. And this is really not consistent, in my view, with with President Reagan's approach to foreign policy and winning the Cold War, we had very little loss of American lives, and he was very prudent about sending young Americans abroad and into war, unless A, it involved the national interest, B, the mission was clear and unambiguous, and C, there was an exit strategy. And I think what we did, what the Bush administration did with respect to going into Afghanistan after Osama bin Laden, the Taliban, the training camps, was the correct move. But then immediately a group of people, particularly at the Defense Department and also in Vice President Cheney's office, pushed almost immediately for a preemptive war in Iraq. And the neoconservatives were really the architect of that war. And I think it was a strategic mistake. Obviously, Saddam Hussein was a bloody secular dictator, but we had him contained. And I think they were so determined to get him out, they didn't consider the law of unintended consequences. And I know many of the neoconservatives. They're my age. But when I was going off to Vietnam, most of them managed to get out of military service and obviously didn't serve in Vietnam. So I don't think they really understood the law of unintended consequences once you make a major military commitment in the Middle East. And also the idea you somehow can impose democracy on a part of the world that doesn't have the sort of the roots or the democratic institutions, to me is an example of abstract intellectualism. So the neoconservatives tend to favor big government conservatism, which I have another chapter in the book called Big Government Conservatism is an Oxymoron. It's really, in my view, a watered-down version of big government liberalism, and they're also for a dominant U.S. military presence in the Middle East. And Ronald Reagan said his greatest mistake was when he sent the troops into Lebanon. We got them out quickly. He sent them in over the objections of Cap Weinberger and the Joint Chiefs of Staff at the request of George Shultz, who was Secretary of State then, and Bud McFarlane, who was National Security Advisor, pulled them out. The Lebanese Prime Minister was assassinated, put him back in. Then you had the tragic barracks bombing where so many Marines were killed, and a huge debate ensued thereafter. Do we have a massive military show of force, or do we pull the forces out? And Reagan sided with his military leaders and also his Secretary of Defense and pulled the forces out and redirected the efforts to win the Cold War. In fact, in this particular situation in Iraq, General Schwarzkopf, General Zinni, a lot of our military leaders, a lot of our CIA top folks, were very much opposed to a preemptive war in Iraq, but the neoconservatives, led by Paul Wolfowitz, who was Deputy Secretary of Defense at the time, and Louis Libby, who was Chief of Staff to Vice President Cheney, pushed hard, and ultimately, since they had the Vice President as their sponsor, were able to prevail in getting us into that war. And I think that's hurt us on a number of fronts and has not been effective in the overall strategic battle to deal with the serious threat of radical Islam.
Well, in terms of America losing her way, you also talk about the bubble economy and the destruction of the middle class. Just what's that notion of the bubble economy, just very quickly?
Well, we've gone from an economy in which we had a system that encouraged Main Street producers, the middle class American small businessmen and women, into a system and an economy dominated by the Wall Street financiers. And part of the problem is we have this very onerous business tax. It's 35%. And so, if you will, the Wall Street private equity guys who love to flip companies are rewarded because they can go in, load a company up with a lot of debt, trim the jobs, so to speak, or ship them overseas, and then turn the company in a couple of years. What I argue is that we went into a period of credit excess in which there was too much dominance by the Wall Street guys. Interest rates were artificially low, and so what we're doing is we're really destroying the middle class in this society. We've lost one-third of our manufacturing base in the last decade. That is 5.5 million good American manufacturing jobs that have either been outsourced, gone overseas, or simply gone away. That is unsustainable. And the reality is, it's not just because of the wage differential. Germany has a trade surplus while we have massive trade deficits. The reason is a tax system that really penalizes savings and capital investment, which are key to private sector job growth.
Right.
In fact, over the last decade, we've had zero private sector job growth in the United States, and in fact, we've lost 1.4 million private sector jobs. The only growth in jobs from 1999 to 2009 has been government jobs.
Right.
And ultimately, that's unsustainable because the government doesn't create jobs. The private sector does, and it's dependent, government that is dependent upon a vibrant private sector in order to be able to fund their necessary services.
Especially manufacturing, too, on that. But now, just turning the corner here and finding our way back, which is the second part of your book, there are two particular points that I think we'll have time to cover. One is a new strategy to address the threat of militant Islam, and then traditional values for a new American century. Let's talk about the new strategy to address the threat of a militant Islam. What have you got to suggest?
Well, let's look back to what we did in the Cold War. We weren't sending American troops hither and yon. We worked with surrogates, we worked with allies, we worked with those who had a common interest. If you look at who has a common interest with respect to being worried about the rise of radicalism, it's Western Europe, which is unfortunately in a post-Christian environment, but nonetheless still is very worried about the rise of Islam. Russia, which I was a strong Cold Warrior, but in the post-communist period, Russia is a potential ally for us. You were seeing the rise of Orthodox Christianity again, which the communists tried to kill and weren't successful in doing so. And the Russians have, if you will, a logical concern about this growing problem. And so what I'm saying is we have got to work with those forces who are worried about the problem as we are, and also in the Balkans. I think we made a terrible mistake in the Clinton administration, and this policy was supported by the neoconservatives. It was really a neoliberal policy in the Clinton administration. To side with the Muslim KLA, which is a rather radical group,
mm-hmm.
in the Bosnian War against the Christian Serbs. I think we should have stayed out of that. The Balkans historically has been the entry point for the Muslims to take Western Europe, and only were stopped many centuries ago in Vienna and at the Battle of Lepanto.
So, Tom, would you be suggesting that the new strategy for the militant Islams is to work with them?
No, work with our logical allies who are worried about radicalism, and to support surrogates such as the Christians who are being threatened in Africa, for example, but not have U.S. forces involved. In other words, there are a number of nations, for example, in Africa, where there's a huge divide between the Christians and the Muslims.
Well, we sure wish we could get Pakistan a little more cooperative with us and working with them.
Well, that's the problem. I mean, you know, obviously, you know, we've got to work with some of the Muslim nations, but the reality is we're better off with nations controlled by folks who are primarily secularists and not deeply committed to the Islamist philosophy, if you will.
Just have about a minute left, Tom, and I just would like to ask you, what are the traditional values that you cite in your book for a new American century?
No matter what we do on economic policy and foreign policy, if we don't fix the culture, nothing works. And you can't have a society bereft of the principles of Christianity, and that's what's happened in Europe.
That's right.
You can't have a Christian civilization when you kill, through abortion, 1.5 million babies every year, when you have, if you will, no distinction between a marriage between a man and a woman and two of the same sex. We've got to return to our traditional values. We've got to have an ethical underpinning of the Judeo-Christian ethic. Otherwise, a free market system doesn't work. It just becomes, in effect, survival of the fittest, the Darwinian ethic. a free society doesn't work unless it has, we hold these truths, we stand for certain principles. And where do you get your ethical compass? It's ultimately from a belief in God. And so we've got to get away from this sort of post-Christian mindset of totally separating God from the public square and understand how dependent we are for our success historically and for our glory years, if you will, mm-hmm. on a strong belief in the Judeo-Christian ethic and the principles of Christianity guiding us as we go forward.
Amen to that on this Pentecost Sunday. Let's tell the nice folks where they can get your book, Tom.
All right. It's called Bringing America Home, How America Lost Her Way and How We Can Find Our Way Back. My name is Tom Pawkin. They can get it at Amazon.com or they can go to TomPawkin.com and get more information about the book, excerpts, reviews, and items about the book and speeches I've given sure. on the book.
Very good. And the last name, ladies and gentlemen, is spelled P-A-U-K-E-N, Pawkin, Tom Pawkin. Happy to have you with us tonight, Tom. Very informative.
Thank you, Monsignor Tom.
And thank you all for joining us at the Magnify Beacon this week, friends. I'm Monsignor Tom Snyder, Wine, your host, and I want to thank GIA Publications for our music, Deacon Jerry and Denise Zabrowski, my field producers, and our in-studio producer, Mr. John Kleiner. And as we always like to say, until next time, every day is a gift from God, and it's our joy and blessing to be able to unwrap it and make the best use of what's inside. And so be good to each other, do what's right, and get to church if you can. You've been listening to Magnify here on AM 1400, WJET, Erie.